We all carry defended answers, carefully prepared responses to the questions we suspect might be coming, versions of ourselves that are acceptable, explainable, and socially functional. And maintaining these versions costs something. Every deflection is a small tax. Every time we answer the question that was asked instead of the one that needed asking, we pay. Most of us don't notice the toll because we've been paying it so long that it feels like the cost of being alive. The surface layer isn't a character flaw. It's a reasonable adaptation to the world that rewards fast, clean, acceptable answers. But I want to suggest something today, that there is a way through the surface layer, that it requires discipline and courage, and that what awaits on the other side isn't just better information. It's liberation. After that clip, you know the rest is going to be good. The weekly Substack curated questions dispatch is now live. You can sign up on either Substack or from the curated questions homepage. Please take 2 seconds to click the follow or subscribe button on your podcast player. You can set it once and forget tracking down each weekly episode. This makes your life easier and signals to the algorithms that the show should be recommended to other listeners. A simple act that can have an outsized positive impact on others. Now, let's get to it. Albert Einstein said, "Don't think about why you question, simply don't stop questioning." Welcome to Curated Questions. I am your host, Ken Woodward. And these questions are not mathematical equations, but rather a resource to encounter personal reflection and growth. As Tupac Shakur stated, even the genius asks questions. Now, let's engage the questioning community. Greetings. Ken Woodward here. Welcome back to another episode of Curated Questions. Together, we engage inquisitive humans about how they use questions to navigate and make sense of our world. I am a fellow traveler and pilgrim on this journey, and I'm glad you are here. 9 months into the pandemic, a longtime friend stopped me outside the office. He's the kind of person who actually means it when he asks how you're doing. He stopped and waited for the answer. I told him all was good. It wasn't. The pandemic, the protests, the political chaos, I was being crushed by it all. We parted ways, and I felt the missed opportunity to be heard. The word fine cost me something. I committed to not making the same mistake again. We all carry defended answers, carefully prepared responses to the questions we suspect might be coming, versions of ourselves that are acceptable, explainable, and socially functional. And maintaining these versions costs something. Every deflection is a small tax. Every time we answer the question that was asked instead of the one that needed asking, we pay. Most of us don't notice the toll because we've been paying it so long that it feels like the cost of being alive. The surface layer isn't a character flaw. It's a reasonable adaptation to the world that rewards fast, clean, acceptable answers. But I want to suggest something today, that there is a way through the surface layer, that it requires discipline and courage, and that what awaits on the other side isn't just better information. It's liberation. Let's talk about the alchemy of questions, about what happens when you refuse to stop at the first layer, about the process of turning ordinary inquiry into something that changes you and the people around you at a cellular level. It starts, of all places, with a ratio. In my conversation with Kevin Kelly, founding executive editor of Wired Magazine and one of the most original thinkers I've ever encountered, he said something I keep returning to. He described two fundamental modes of human endeavor, exploitation and exploration. Exploitation is where most of life runs. You take what works and you make it better. You refine, optimize, and deliver. There's nothing wrong with this. It's how organizations function, how careers progress, how most of the value in the world gets created. Exploration is something else entirely. deep questioning lives in exploration. It is structurally inefficient, and that inefficiency is not a flaw. It's the cost of transformation. You head into the unknown. You drop the mandate of making things better. You deliberately enter territory where you know most of what you find will be dead ends, wasted effort, and dumb questions that go nowhere. And you do it anyway. Kelly's framework for the ratio, roughly two-thirds exploitation and one-third exploration, shows up everywhere once you start looking. The restaurant where you order two dishes you love and one you've never tried. The musician who gives the audience their classics and then plays something new that might not land. The biology of mutation, where most genetic variations fail, but a small percentage become the future. In a conversation with leadership advisor and photographer Phil Liebman, he mentioned something similar and reminded me of Kelly's viewpoint. He said the professionals, regarding his photography work, aren't distinguished by their eye alone. They're distinguished by their willingness to burn through hundreds of frames to get to the one that matters. The bad pictures aren't failures, they're the price of admission to the good ones. Questions work the same way. Most questions are dumb at first. Most don't lead anywhere. Questioning is deeply inefficient. It interrupts, it diverts, it consumes time without guaranteed return. This is not a bug in the process. This is the process. But here's what nobody tells you about generating volume. The goal isn't statistical. It isn't that you ask enough questions, one of them will accidentally be good. You felt it. The first few questions are careful. The fifth gets looser. The tenth starts to surprise even you. You're generating fast enough that your internal sensor can't keep up. The part of you that edits before you speak, that asks whether a question is appropriate or smart or safe, that part needs to be outrun. But there's something underneath all of this that took me years to understand. You cannot cycle freely through bad questions if you're operating from scarcity, if every question feels like a limited resource you might waste. Kelly talked about this directly. Growing up in a place where scarcity was real leaves a tape recorder running in the back of your head. Don't waste. Don't squander. Every piece of paper counts. I know this tape recorder. I've heard it my whole life. I've even said it. We don't have the money to waste on trying. It needs to be good the first time around. The abundance mindset isn't optional equipment for this kind of inquiry. It's the foundation. The well is bottomless if you return to it daily. You get more tomorrow. You can afford to throw away today's bad questions. Condé Nast once celebrated the volume of what they wasted as necessary ingredient in producing anything truly at the edge of excellence. Whether you're developing photographs, publishing magazines, or excavating truth, the same principle applies. Questions are no different. You cannot strip mine if you're rationing your dynamite. Once you commit to volume, once you accept the inefficiency as the cost of the work, something interesting happens. You start to notice that questions move through layers. The first questions out of any brain are, well, throat clearing. They're safe, familiar, and socially acceptable. The questions have worked before in similar situations. They're not bad questions. They're first draft questions. They're the brain warming up, covering the obvious before it will consent to go anywhere interesting. Beneath that layer is something slightly more uncomfortable. Beneath that, something that starts to challenge assumptions. Beneath that are questions you don't know you had. And somewhere below all of that, if you stay at the table long enough, is the question that was generating the whole inquiry without announcing itself. I think of this as strip mining, patient, methodical, unglamorous excavation through each layer. You plan for it. You bring the equipment. You do the work without any guarantee of what you'll find. Each layer of questions consumes the obvious and reveals the substrate beneath it. But occasionally, unpredictably, unrepeatable on demand, the ground gives way. The sinkhole drops you somewhere you couldn't have planned to reach. A question you thought was ordinary suddenly opens into something much deeper. You're not where you were a moment ago, and you couldn't tell anyone exactly how you got there. You can't manufacture sinkholes. You can only create the conditions where they become possible, by refusing to stop digging, by staying past the point where the comfortable questions run out. Strip mining is discipline. Sinkholes are grace. This isn't just a personal discipline. Every community of practice, every organization, every culture has an implicit agreement about how deep questioning is permitted to go, an authorized depth, usually unspoken, enforced not by the rule, but by the raised eyebrow, the awkward silence, the gentle redirection. For centuries, disease was attributed to bad air, miasma. It was coherent. It was functional. It explained what people could see. It took scientists refusing to stop at that layer, willing to look through microscopes and trust what contradicted consensus, to uncover germ theory. The shift didn't refine medicine, it rewrote it. Every organization has a question it won't ask. Every family does too. And every individual has one. The question beneath the surface is rarely hidden. It's simply unauthorized. Most people stop exactly where it gets interesting, because that's also when it gets uncomfortable. The discomfort isn't a stop sign. It's merely a depth gauge. You don't have to look far to see the authorized depth agreement in action. Turn on any press briefing. Watch a congressional hearing. Observe the modern political interview. The dodge, the pivot to talking points. The question answered with a question. The communications director who materializes from nowhere to announce, time's up. We've watched this happen so many times that we've stopped registering it as remarkable. But what we're witnessing in those moments is real-time demonstration of the authorized depth agreement in our public discourse, democracy running deliberately at the surface level. The cost of that is hard to calculate and easy to feel. The journalists and investigators who do the real work know something about this. There's a moment in good investigative reporting. Reporters talk about it informally as finding the live wire. The interview is going along at the surface level, and then a question lands somewhere it wasn't supposed to. The subject's energy changes. Answers get shorter. Someone reaches for water. The publicist interrupts. The room shifts weight. That resistance isn't a signal to back off. It's confirmation that you've just touched something real. The pushback is the depth gauge going off. But that's the external signal, readable from the outside, visible in someone else's reaction. What I want to talk about is the internal one, the one that lives in us. There is a specific sensation that arrives when a question, yours or someone else's, crosses into deeper territory. It's a strange cocktail of aliveness and wrongness simultaneously, a feeling that the conversation just changed. Something has been said that can't be unsaid, that you've arrived somewhere and you're not entirely sure the path back is obvious. Most people interpret this as social error, as having gone too far, as the signal to apologize, deflect, walk it back. I want to offer a different interpretation. That sensation is arrival, not trespass. I felt it repeatedly during my years of walking and talking with people about connection and social justice. At the time, I didn't have language for it. I just knew something had shifted. And the conversation had become different in kind, not just degree. Looking back, I understand now that I was crossing depth agreements that most civic conversations carefully maintain. Not to cause discomfort, but the questions the moment required live below the surface level. The live wire isn't a warning. It's a welcome. If you feel heat, stay. I want to tell you about an insightful question that did more work than years of organizational analysis ever managed. I was in a toxic work environment. I had an opportunity to go somewhere else, a rotation to the Pentagon. And I had a perfectly prepared answer for why I was taking it. career development, broadening experience. Everyone who attained higher positions needed time in the building to grow their career. The right move at the right time. All true. All surface layer. The director who had signed the approval paperwork had been trying to do the hard work of correcting what was broken in that environment. She asked me a question before approving. As we sat at her office table, she asked me if I was, quote, running toward or running away. It only took 5 words to get to the heart of everything I was holding on to. Every prepared answer I had dissolved instantly. There was a fraction of a second, you know the one, where you can feel yourself at the fork. The deflection is right there. The comfortable answer is available, justifiable, even admirable. I would have sounded reasonable. It would have protected everyone involved. And then something else happened. I answered both. I wanted out, and I wanted the opportunity. She broke into her enormous smile, took my hand, and told me I was going to do well on the rotation. Something was released, not dramatically, not with fanfare. We both knew the whole truth when spoken. Maintaining a partial story had been costing me energy. When the full truth was spoken, the tax disappeared. This is what I mean when I talk about the liberation of the honest answer. It isn't just emotional relief. It's metabolic. We've been running a background process maintaining the distance between what we are saying and what's true. When the honest answer arrives, that process shuts down. The energy returns. What that director did in 5 words was solve an engineering problem. That's the work. That's always the work. The problem every skilled questioner is trying to solve. How do you create conditions where the cost of the honest answer drops below the cost of the defended one? Different people solve this problem with different tools. The detective uses pressure and strategic silence. The therapist uses a relationship built carefully over months and the gradual erosion of the need to perform. The priest uses the confessional, a designated space where the depth agreement is explicitly suspended, where what you can say carries different rules. The bartender uses anonymity and the strange permission of talking to someone you'll never see again outside this room. Wildly different context, same engineering problem. I've felt the pull towards honesty in small groups over the years, in conversation, in moments of unexpected depth with strangers, in situations where the official answer and the true one diverged, and choosing the true one was just cleaner. There's something about a plain, unapologetic, straight answer that is deeply freeing, not reckless, not confessional for the sake of it, just accurate. The sensation of no longer carrying something that was never yours to carry. That's what lives on the other side of the surface layer. Not information, not insight, liberation. The medieval alchemists spent centuries trying to turn base metals into gold. They never succeeded at the literal goal. But in the process of obsessively asking questions, wrong questions, dumb questions, questions that led nowhere, with sufficient depth and commitment, they accidentally invented chemistry. They built the foundations of modern medicine and materials science. They found something more valuable than what they were looking for by refusing to stop. The alchemist is never the same person after the work as before. That's not a side effect. That's the point. The alchemy isn't the answer, it's the conditions. The discipline of strip mining, the willingness to stay when the live wire hums, the openness to sinkholes you can't manufacture. And when the honest answer arrives, the energy returns. That return is liberation. Alchemy is the transformation of defended answers into honest ones, and the return of the energy we spent protecting the story. Most people stay at the surface because the Surface is functional. It works well. It doesn't cost you too much. And asking more feels like a luxury, inefficient, directionless, possibly a little self-indulgent. But the Surface layer is also where the defended answers live. And defended answers are expensive. You're paying for them right now in energy you don't have to spare. So I want to leave you with a question. Not a comfortable one. The kind that might arrive at the live wire if you sit with it, honestly. Where are you maintaining a defended answer that's costing you more than the truth would? You don't have to answer it today, but don't stop too soon.
Ken here. The weekly Substack curated questions dispatch is now live. You can sign up on either Substack or from the curated questions homepage. Additionally, the homepage includes a link to record your right now question, which may be included in an upcoming episode. If you have found this show provides you value, please hit that subscribe button and leave a comment. Until I found myself on this side of the microphone, I didn't understand how much of a difference those actions actually do make. And that wraps up another episode. Drop in the comments section of your favorite podcast player the moments that will stick with you. To those on the other side of the speaker, thank you for being here. Gratitude shout out to Beauty Pill for the show's music and producer Ben Ford for the technical help. This episode was recorded on Piscataway land. Please engage with this episode in some manner. Download, follow, save, like, share, or comment about something that resonated. This action ensures we are engaging the questioning community. Until next time, keep questioning.